The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. If the Twitter toddler in the White House has you completely stressed out, head on over to BubbleGenius.com and pick up their exclusive Republican voodoo doll featuring the face and body of our cartoon dictator. This item is only available for a limited time, so get yours now, only $25 at BubbleGenius.com, with a third of the proceeds going to support the campaigns of resistance candidates across the country. Plus, if you use our promo code BOBC at checkout, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from resistance headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
This was not written for chiefs.
Hear me. Hear this! Among my people, we carry many such words as this from many lands, many worlds. Many are equally good and are as well respected. But wherever we have gone, no words have said this thing of importance in quite this way. Look at these three words written larger than the rest, with a special pride never written before or since. Tall words proudly saying, we the people. That which you call Eid Plebnista was not written for the chiefs or the kings or the warriors or the rich or the powerful, but for all the people. Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning out of the words, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. Ourselves and our posterity to ordain and establish this Constitution. These words and the words that follow were not written only for the Yangs, but for the Kongs as well.
The Kongs?
They must apply to everyone or they mean nothing. Do you understand?
I do not fully understand.
Bob Seska. Today's Rachel Maddow Show Award for Headline Excellence goes to Bob Seska.
The Bob Seska Show.
What's vacation mean?
Vacation's when you go somewhere and you don't ever come back.
God damn it!
Hello, Bob.
Hello, Rachel. Oh, what day is it? I have no idea. Oh, it's Tuesday. Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. And this is the Bob Seska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. I am Bob, and we're brought to you by the best soap in the world. It's Bubble Genius. Also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. Get free legal advice at thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez, or just click the link on the podcast page. Oh, look, right over there. It's Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
It's Tyranny Tuesday, Bob.
It's Tyranny Tuesday.
It's Tyranny Tuesday, and I have come back from vacation.
That's right. But Donald Trump, of course, has continued to remain on vacation, and he will be for, a couple of weeks. It's almost like it's like a vacation for the rest of us. When Donald Trump goes on vacation, we all go on vacation. That's the way it should
school,
be.
You ever leave school at lunchtime, you know, go out for lunch, and then you just don't bother to go back?
Yeah.
Maybe he'll do that with his vacation. Maybe he just won't come back.
That's right.
Something, wouldn't it?
But don't you know? I mean, vacation is where you go away and you don't ever come back.
What's vacation mean?
Vacation's when you go somewhere and you don't ever come back.
But of course you came back. You were in Kansas, right?
Yeah, and I still came back. I came back in spite of that. I had trepidations about going to the heart of Trump country. And believe me, there are still plenty of Trump supporters there. But I had the opportunity to do something I recommend to every son of every father. And that is, if your dad is of the age where he meets almost daily at McDonald's with other old guys for coffee, as is the case with my dad, go with him sometime, because it's fascinating. First of all, I truly enjoyed the half a dozen men who sat around one of those tiny little round McDonald's tables and chatted about all manner of things. Trump and politics didn't come up much, and far be it from me to behind enemy lines bring it up.
Yeah.
And I've been a little frustrated over the past 6 months.
For one thing, really?
Trump's been president.
Yeah.
But for another, I've been fearful of discussing politics with my dad, and that broke my heart because, a lot of really important stuff is going on, and I really have wanted to talk with him about it. It's a time when you kind of want to be on the same side of a thing.
Yeah, sure.
Before the election, we had agreed not to talk about politics because it was increasingly clear that it looked like, and I don't know who he voted for ultimately, but it looked like he was going to vote for Trump. And now what I hear by going to lunch with these older white men in Kansas some of them remained silent. But a couple of them were actually making jokes about Trump.
Really?
Soft jokes, not necessarily mean jokes, but they were joking about, he's less than reliable on certain things.
Do you think go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's the door opening. That's the door opening, and we've seen it in the latest polls this week.
Yeah.
But that's the door opening on Trump supporters saying, well, maybe he's not so great.
Yeah.
So I found that very, and the fact that my father then at home asked me privately and extensively about the investigation, and I laid it out for him, and he didn't look at me like I was crazy. Not that he ever has, but when explaining this stuff to somebody, you can sound a little crazy. So I was careful as I could be not to do that, and it was well received. So now I could have that political discussion with my dad, and I could sort of bring him up to where I see things, and even went so far to ask me if he thought that General John Kelly would make a difference and that sort of thing, which we may or may not discuss later. But I found all of this, my dad's openness to learning, the openness to humor about Trump at that meeting at McDonald's, all to be very, very encouraging. So I bring what I think is good news.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned this whole story because I could have told that exact same story. You take out the part about Kansas and McDonald's, and it's exactly the kind of predicament that I'm in. My dad and I have always been able to talk about politics. I mean, going back to when I was 17 years old, we've always had. And, sometimes it gets a little heated. There's been a few occasions when it's gotten a lot heated.
Yeah.
But since the election, and maybe even about 6 months prior to the election, the whole political aspect of my relationship with my dad completely vanished. I mean, just completely dissipated, where I don't feel like it's even something that I can bring up, even in a casual way. Even when we're talking about something that may be just process, like hiring a new chief of staff or getting a bill through Congress or anything like that, put Trump aside, nothing has been on the table anymore. Yeah. And I feel like it's kind of affected my relationship with my dad. Certainly, I'm still close with my dad, but we've lost this one crucial piece of conversation. So now, it's almost as if, it's funny, and I really didn't mean to get off talking about this in particular, but I feel like, to a certain extent, it's almost impossible for me to even mention my career to even strangers. I mean, I went, I've been revising, and we were kind of goofing around with my audio setup here on my side of things right before the show, and I went and I bought a new laptop to help with the whole production process on the podcast.
Right.
And
the things we do, right?
God, you have no idea.
But then, support these shows.
Exactly. Holy hell. But the thing is, I went and went to one of these little computer fix-it shops, which are really, I mean, hands down the best place to go if you want a machine, if you want service. Awesome. Screw the big box stores. Go to your local little computers and more shop that in a strip mall somewhere. Those are the best places to get you the real gearhead. So I went in there and I bought this laptop. It was the first laptop I saw as I walked in, and it had exactly what I was looking for. And I said, this is amazing. I can't believe it. I found this laptop. It's got all the specifications I needed. And so, the guy who was running the shop, we started making small talk, and he asked, well, what do you need this for? I said, well, I do a podcast. That's, of course, the big, opening for, oh, crap, I shouldn't have said that. I should have just said, I'm a blogger, or I work on the internet, something more general.
I know the feeling.
And so he said, yeah, so you do this podcast. What's the podcast? And I go, you know, and you try to get a sense of someone's politics just by meeting them. And it's almost impossible, especially in Northern California, because it's such a weird mix up here of conservative people, kind of Rand Paul libertarian people, left libertarians, a lot of left wing libertarians. And then just regular people. And so I had to kind of tell the guy, it's politics. It's a little bit of politics. I talk politics. I'm sure. And he didn't. And thank goodness he didn't ask me, well, what side? How about Trump? Are you going to help make America great again? I was just I was expecting that. And fortunately, that never happened. But this is a thing now where you really can't in mixed company mention what you do for a living. I certainly can't. I don't feel comfortable doing that unless I know for a fact that everyone else is kind of similar to me.
Well, aside from the conservatives, aside from the diehard Trump supporters who will always be there, I also know that there are pockets larger than you would expect pockets of people who are anti-Trump.
Yeah.
And I found a number of them. We sort of find each other. And that's a good thing, too. And it's nice to know that even in a state as red as Kansas, one of my favorite poets wrote a book called How Can You Live in Kansas and Expect Anything to Change?
Right.
And you know, I mean, but it really is, at least in Wichita, Kansas, the part of the state that I was in, there are larger than expected pockets of progressives and people who have deep, dark concerns about this administration. And so we have allies everywhere, even in the reddest of states, which I think is another important thing to remember.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. And, I don't know what the split was in the election as far as Trump versus Clinton goes, but it had to be somewhere in the range of, you know, maybe 70-30.
I don't know the numbers either, but that sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, so that obviously indicates that there's at least 30% of the people there are similarly minded to the rest of us in Kansas. But, you know, it really doesn't matter where you go. You're always going to find these big pockets of red state people who like Donald Trump, for example. And, you know, I mean, even like I said, here in Northern California, it's such an awkward mix. And I go to this place where I get my haircut, you know, about once a month. And it's like an old school barbershop with the old barbershop chair and the pole out in the front. And I go
love
in.
That. That's the real America. I love
exactly.
That.
It's real America, right? And so I'm in there to get my hair cut. I think it was last week, in fact. And it was funny. They started talking about, there was the guy who cuts my hair, and then a bunch of his friends came in to also get their hair cut while I was sitting there getting my hair cut. So they all struck up a conversation, which is great for me because then I can just look at my iPhone and scroll through Twitter endlessly while everyone else is talking. I don't have to make small talk. And so they started talking about comb-overs. And they started joking about Trump. Now, these are clearly pro-Trump guys, but they were making fun of Trump's hair. And it's actually really reminiscent of the story that you told, where they're actually making jokes about Donald Trump. And that
it's a softening. Yeah, it's a softening of their support. Remember, that's how it started with us. You know, I mean, exactly. If you think about it, we started with the hair, and then we moved on to more important things. But it is a softening of their position, and the latest poll numbers certainly shore that up. I mean, Quinnipiac and one other poll showing Trump support now to 33 or 32%.
Yeah.
Maybe fewer than 1 in 3 Americans support this guy now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Roughly 75% of us don't believe him or trust him or anything his White House says.
Yep.
You know, this is, it doesn't get much worse than this for a president, except for actual impeachment. If ever the stage has been set for it, I believe we're at that point now.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, if the economy wasn't doing so well, thanks, Obama, he'd be doing a lot worse in the polls. I mean, he may be 5 to 10 points lower in the polls if the economy wasn't booming as much as it is. And, you know, I mean, to go back to this Quinnipiac poll, this is very, very bad news for Donald Trump. 62% say that he is not honest. 63% say that he does not have good leadership skills. 59% say that he's not care about the average American. 58% say that he's not a strong person. 55% say that he's not intelligent. 63% say that he does not share their values. These are horrible, horrible numbers.
And Republican support has dropped by 10%. He's lost, he's lost half of the men who voted for Trump.
Right.
Approve of the job he's doing. 2/3 of the white women who voted for Trump no longer approve. It's slipping severely in his top demographic, which is white voters who did not attend college. And so he's losing that base that is so precious to him, that base that allows him to get away with, to a certain degree, what he wants in Congress. As soon as Congress sees Trump's base disappear, they will no longer regard him. They will no longer obey him. They will go their own and begin to separate themselves from him. And this is the time we've been waiting for, is we're right at that tipping point. It hasn't tipped yet, but we're right at that tipping point. It gets closer almost daily.
Well, that's why, Buzz, the Trump, Fox News Channel, and all the people surrounding, certainly the Republican Party, has been ballyhooing the status of the economy. Now, this is what's been keeping Trump's head above the surface of the quicksand. The quicksand, by the way, of his own making. Let's make this perfectly clear.
Absolutely. Every grain.
This is entirely Donald Trump's fault, because I still have this ongoing theory that, thank goodness, it's this double-edged sword. His insanity is a double-edged sword. His insanity, on one hand, is destabilizing. It's deconstructing the executive branch. It's creating awful new trends and ruining traditions in the American presidency. But at the same time, his insanity is revealing all of his mistakes. I mean, he's constantly telegraphing what he's going to do. He's constantly incriminating himself.
He's such a dope.
He really is the biggest dope in the world. And he doesn't even realize it. He just continues to live in that eternal now. And for that matter, he doesn't care about what's going to happen a week from now. He doesn't care what happened a week ago. Everything is what needs to get him through today. And what he sees as getting him through today is flagrantly lying about the status of the economy. Now, while he's accurate in saying that the economy is doing well and a million jobs have been created in the last six months, he's, of course, taking credit for it, and he doesn't deserve credit for it in any way, shape, or form. And nor is a million jobs in 6 months unique to the last 6 months.
And you outlined this well in your Salon piece and in your Banter piece, both of which I've read. In preparation for today's show, because I like to be up to speed. I like to know what you're thinking. And so I follow that. And that's true. But it's also not something a president does to try to take credit this early in their administration for these sorts of numbers, because they do appear to be an after effect of the previous administration, and B, because if things go south, he's stuck with the blame, as I believe you also pointed out.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you start owning the economy, you're screwed if it goes south. It's like Barack Obama owned Obamacare. So when the healthcare.gov marketplace was rolled out and it failed, Barack Obama took responsibility, and he accepted responsibility and blame when it was given to him. And he
fixed it, and we moved on.
Exactly. But this is what happens when you own something, when you own an issue, you own the status of something. Then when it goes sour, people tend to blame you. And that's where Donald Trump is just, that's the eternal now, really. It's coming back. Yeah. It's going to come back, and it's going to haunt him, because the Dow cannot continue to go up in perpetuity, especially when it's already at 22,000. And I'm certainly not wishing for that to happen. No one got screwed more than I did in the Great Recession. But no one wants to see a recession happen again, certainly not one as deep as the Great Recession. But there's always the chance of another couple of quarters of negative growth or something happening in the stock market. And that's just, I'm just being realistic. That's something that just happens, which is why it's so politically dumb to take full credit for it now. But going back to the job scenario, I mean, they've been, in fact, you know what, the GOP Twitter account, the Republican National Committee's official Twitter account, which is at GOP, tweeted out in all caps. This is a big all caps screamer tweet saying, unprecedented economic growth. I should really do it this way. Unprecedented economic growth under POTUS. And then they included a graphic here. It said, win of the week, milestone for Trump, 1 million new jobs in 6 months.
This, and as you pointed out, we've had a million new jobs every six-month period for the last several years, including the same period in Obama's last year and in the final six months of his term. In fact, this had become the norm lately, so there's nothing unprecedented about this. In fact, in the first quarter of Obama's last year, he added, I don't have the number in front of me, I believe it was... I can't remember who it was, 25,000 or 250,000, maybe a quarter of a million more jobs in that same period than Trump generated in his. My point is simply there were more. This is less. So, again, this is a stupid thing to crow about, but you know they're crowing about it because it's all they have.
Exactly, exactly. Now, there is a downside in all of this, which is that people generally believe what they see, and since Trump is making a big deal out of the economy is projected as looking good, which is rightfully so. The economy is relatively strong, all things
except for income disparity, which maybe people will wake up to at some point, or maybe they'll continue to sleep through it. But except for income disparity, which is shocking when you look at a proper chart of it, except for that, things are going pretty well.
Well, and Donald Trump thinks he can walk into the Carrier factory, or he can walk into Boeing and save 500 jobs here, 500 jobs there, get someone to at least agree verbally to building a plant somewhere in the Midwest or something like that. And that's his form of job creation, these anecdotal, micromanaged little pockets of job creation.
It's all about the show. It's all about the video clips.
Exactly.
The numbers have never mattered to this administration and never will. It's the show. That's what he loves.
Have you ever noticed, Buzz, how the real unemployment rate is no longer discussed by Donald Trump anymore?
I have. Yeah, it's actually, it's down to 4.3%, I think now, but it's actually 40, at least according to the campaigning. The campaigning of Donald Trump.
It's 20, 30, 32, 42. Right. That's the unemployment rate, or that's the real unemployment rate.
Yeah. Which of course, not to be confused with the real news.
Right. Well, of course, this was always the bogus metric, because they were taking a statistic that included retirees and students and disabled people who aren't in the workforce in the first place. Plus, you now have an entire generation of baby boomers who are starting to retire. And so that's why the real unemployment figure is as high as it was. And the next time
a Republican says to you, yeah, but what about the people who've stopped, aren't being counted because they've stopped looking for work? And I would say to them, what about the 6.2 million jobs that are available, according to U.S. industry, that haven't been filled?
Right.
What about that?
Well, a lot of those people who stopped looking for work because they reached retirement age and they retired. They don't need the health.
Those were counted as well.
Yeah, exactly. They don't need the health care anymore because they've got the employer-based health care because they've got Medicare now. So they can use that and so on. These are all the factors that go into calculating those quote-unquote real unemployment rates that Donald Trump was so fond of prior to the election and was being so skeptical of the actual unemployment rate, which is now perfect. this is the unemployment rate that we all have to talk about. Yeah.
I remember years and years ago when unemployment was not a concern, and unemployment had actually fallen to about 4%.
Yeah.
And a lot of people determined at that point it would never get any lower than that. It's never been any lower than that. We all sort of came to the conclusion that there would always be a 4% unemployment rate at a minimum.
Yep.
So it may as well, in that sense, be zero.
Yeah.
It's just not. Now, jobs aren't a problem. Wages are a problem. Benefits are a problem. Having a lot of part-time workers and not having to pay them benefits or proper wages, that's a problem.
Yep.
The income disparity, these are things that need to be addressed. And, of course, there's no interest in this on the Republican side.
It's something that they desperately need, though. They desperately need to talk about this. Otherwise, their guy is surely headed for impeachment.
It's all they have, exactly, at this point. Yeah. Anything to distract at this point. Just, you know, obviously a lot of things have been tried. I also saw something. I wish I had numbers to bear this out, but the fact that people are no longer buying the distractions, they're no longer buying the lies, that people are starting to take a broader view and not just listen to what Trump or his administration says.
Yeah, I wonder, do they really understand? And obviously there's the public face of the Trump White House. But right. Do they really understand how much of a laughingstock they are? I mean, is that something that they really have internalized and then everything else is just facade in order to cover up for this deepening despair that they've got to deal with?
I think they do and they don't. I don't know if they're despaired because some of them are. You know, there's some of the intelligent ones who we don't hear from, they are. But the louder ones that we do hear from a lot are not. And that starts with the president. I think he's really he knows he's under attack. He knows he's being attacked from all sides. But at the same time, he just considers it politics. He considers it the opposition. He considers it fake news. So he knows the opposition's out there. He knows that there are a number of things that speak against him, but he's not worried about that because he's the president.
Exactly.
And so he feels very secure in that. And, you know, that's something else I saw today. I think it was in the Washington Post, an opinion piece about the fact that Trump has an advantage that Pence doesn't have, and that is incompetence. At least we have it argued that we have less to fear with Trump than Pence. Were it to come to that, I still say Pence is gone, too.
Yeah.
But were it to come to that, you know, Pence, he could get things done that we don't want done. And if you think Trump's done a fair amount of that, which he really hasn't, Pence would really do it and really do it up conservative right.
Now, what do you think is going to happen with Pence, Buzz? Do you think he's going to be asked to resign by Trump because Trump is getting jealous and irritated over the fact all this all this scuttlebutt about Pence possibly running as a primary challenger to Trump in 2020? Or do you think Pence will just step down on his own accord, saying, I no longer want to be a part of this administration, and leave in that fashion? So it's either Pence leaving on good terms, Pence leaving on bad terms, and eventually becoming Trump's worst nightmare in the primary, or someone else coming in. There was a New Hampshire poll that showed John Kasich now defeats Donald Trump in a New Hampshire primary, in a hypothetical New Hampshire primary. 52% of the vote for John Kasich. Donald Trump gets 40%. I think some Republicans, including Mike Pence, are lining up for a serious primary challenge. We could end up having several Republican primary challengers. I mean, A-list Republicans primary challenging a sitting president, which is really unprecedented.
A Republican ham sandwich could beat Trump in a primary at this point. I really think so. I also I think that Pence will either resign or he will be removed from office for if nothing else, the Mike Flynn thing. He got letters from Flynn's lawyers saying Flynn had business dealings with Russia and Ukraine. He recommended, Flynn is A-OK, told Trump that Flynn is A-OK to be national security advisor. And then a month into the administration, when confronted by a Fox reporter about Flynn's Russian and Ukrainian connections, Pence lied and said, this is the first I've heard about it. So I think he's as much a part of this as anything else. And I think there's as much of a chance that he'll go down as will Trump and others in the administration. If he's smart, if he is not as deluded as Trump, he may do an Agnew and get the hell out of the way. He may just slip out the back.
Yeah.
And that would be okay too.
Yeah. You know, something just occurred to me that if the Democrats end up retaking the House in 2018 and then Pence resigns and then Donald Trump has to nominate a new vice president, I think the confirmation on the new vice president goes through the House. Don't quote me on that. I'm not entirely certain on the process there, but I would say I'm about 60% positive that any confirmation process on the Hill for a vice president because I don't think, when was the last time we had something like that? Maybe with Gerald Ford, maybe when Nixon appointed Spiro Agnew resigned, Gerald right. Ford came in, and maybe that was the last time. I forget exactly who, but I think it was the House of Representatives that confirmed Gerald, whenever I say Gerald Ford, I always want to do that Tom Brokaw bit with Dana Carvey. Right. Gerald Ford dead today at the census age of 85. And then, you know, so it was, if it's a Democratic House approving the vice president, this is going to be an interesting choice, because then therefore Donald Trump will have to choose someone that will be confirmed by Democrats on the House side. This is going to get
real. We have to check our history books and our government texts, but that sounds right to me, and certainly it would have to be confirmed. But we're getting ahead of ourselves here. But I do think that one way or another, Trump will one way or another, Pence will disappear. And if he thinks he has a shot at being president, I think he's deluded, and that he may be somewhat deluded in that regard as well. It's just whereas. You know, we talked before about the balance in these individuals between incompetence and evil. And in my heart, when I look at that guy, I get the sense that there's more evil in Pence than incompetence. Yeah. When I look at Trump, I see some evil, but mostly incompetence.
Here's another really crazy wrinkle we could end up experiencing, which is that Donald Trump resigns before the midterms. Here's how that would help. The Republican Party. Here's how it would behoove the Republican Party to force Trump out before the 2018 midterms, or at least before whatever it is, January 6th or whatever inauguration day is, to bring in the new Congress, which is that if Donald Trump and the Republicans want a vice president to serve under the new president, Mike Pence, let's say Donald Trump resigns, Mike Pence becomes president. Mike Pence has to nominate a vice president. Mike Pence nominates a vice president. You're going to want a Republican Congress in order to confirm that vice president.
Right.
So
right.
There, and whether
or to get anything else done either. I remember no matter who takes the presidency, if Trump is bounced mid-term, then no matter who takes it is going to be politically neutralized.
Yeah.
And especially after the 2018 midterm election.
It's a proposition for the Republicans. If they want to continue to do business, they need to start taking action. They need to start looking at a path to removing Donald Trump now. Otherwise, it's going to become increasingly more difficult for them later
on. I think they're looking quietly. And by the way, somebody asked me recently, they said, well, you know, if Trump goes and Pence goes, then if Ryan, Paul Ryan, were to become president, wouldn't he just pardon those guys? And, yeah, they're just you know, to unite the country the same way Ford did with Nixon. And that is possible. But it also strikes me as possible. I don't mean to be naive, but it strikes me as possible that Paul Ryan, seeing the fires around him, could also unite the country by not pardoning Trump. It would be a way of disassociating himself and his beloved party from that evil man who just, you know, was removed from government. I just think that's a possibility, that he could just as easily not pardon Trump and or Pence as that he would do that.
Yeah, and you know what? This leads into something that I've been stomping and ranting about throughout my house to anyone who will listen. mainly Kimberly Johnson has to deal with it. But, you know, I've been ranting about the fact that this cannot stand. I mean, this behavior by Donald Trump, even you take Trump-Russia out of it entirely. Mm-hmm. But obviously we have to include that. That's the major reason why he would end up getting removed. But between Trump-Russia and between Trump's actual non-presidential behavior, his undignified, incompetent behavior.
His mental health, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. This cannot be allowed to continue. This cannot be allowed to prosper. Because if it's allowed to prosper, then you have copycats. As soon as copycats see that this is the way to get elected, this is the way to run an administration in the modern era, then suddenly this becomes kind of a norm, not across the board, because we're always going to have some competent politicians, some traditionalists when it comes to running for president, when it comes to running an administration. But you're always going to have now, I mean, we're starting to see little hints of it. Kid Rock running for Senate, for example, where it's okay for weirdos and crazy people.
Even the dumbest voters get smarter because of things like this. It certainly happened after Watergate. It didn't last forever, clearly. But if if someone were to come along and say, I'm the guy for the job because I have no government experience, which is essentially what Trump did, I don't think America's as eager to get somebody who has no government experience as they were 9 or 10 months ago.
Yeah,
I think that desire for a business face or a non-government face in that job, I think that's waned. I think we got over that. I think we had buyer's remorse about that. Again, remember, half the white women, white men who voted for Trump have bailed on him, and two-thirds of the white women who voted for Trump have bailed on him. They have buyer's remorse. They have regrets about the votes that they cast, and they are going, those folks, enough to tilt an election, are not going to be fooled this next time. Maybe in another 20 or 30 years, but not anytime real soon.
Yeah. See, now, I'm going with you on this, Buzz, and I'll tell you why. Because not only are you an optimist on this, but you also accurately guessed that Trump would sign the Russia sanctions bill. So that won you all kinds of additional credibility, I'm sure.
Well, we both won because you had concerns that he would not, and as it turns out, he signed that bill with an asterisk, saying, well, he and Tillerson both said, we signed it, but we're not happy about it. It's flawed. It's not a good bill. Well, that's their way of saying we signed it, but we didn't want to. And of course, now Russia's goading Trump, saying, you've shown how weak you are by letting your Congress take over your executive powers.
Yeah.
That gets right to Trump.
Right. And now the Russians are actually trolling Trump. In fact, Kimberly Johnson, too, I mentioned Kimberly Johnson a second ago, she tweeted yesterday that that picture of Vladimir Putin fishing out on lake in Russia, and he's fishing with his shirt off. Right at the same time that Donald Trump is also taking a vacation. And it was her theory, and I agree with this theory, that was Putin trolling Trump. Like, I can take my shirt off because I'm a tough Russian man, and you can't take your shirt off because you're a weak pussy.
And that was the message. Putin has severe political troubles of his own in Russia, but Russians admire that manly thing. Plays big in Russia. So every time he does something like that, it boosts his own domestic popularity a bit more. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the main purpose of that was to show Trump, I can do this, I'm fit, and you're not.
Well, the big question, Buzz, is while you were on vacation, I'm not going to ask you if you took your shirt off. I assume you did at some point.
I did a lot of hard work. Bob, a lot of people, like, I hear the music coming up, so let me just say, a lot of people ask, what do you and Bob do during the day? How do you spend your days? And it's the answer is easy. We get up, we bathe with Bubble Genius, and we shave with Harry's razors.
That's right.
And then throughout the day, between fighting our various battles, we order stuff from our Amazon pages.
Exactly.
And then when evening comes, we have dinner from Blue Apron, and then we go to bed on our Hello pillows. And that's how we spend our days.
Yeah, exactly. That's the complete package. You know what? If you want to be a real supporter of the show, you also have to throw in there during your schedule, because of course we wouldn't do this, but during the course of your day, maybe pop in over at Patreon and drop another dollar into the Patreon tally, huh?
Yeah. Anytime we get some spare change, we do that. And also, anytime, sometimes throughout the day, we need to consult with a lawyer. And that's when we call Bob Bowden, of course. And that's everybody who sponsors the show.
That's exactly right. That's the full, if you want to be a completist when it comes to supporting this show, you got to do all of those things.
Right.
But for now, I mean, the main thing you got to do is go and get yourself a Hello pillow because, good Lord, I have had the best night's sleep. I just had another great night's sleep, a full eight and a half hours last night, one of the most restful sleeps I've had in quite a while. And it was.
Can I tell you, I'm sleeping at my dad's house, no Hello pillows. And
that's what I was going to ask you about,
The pillow I had was squishy, and I didn't sleep well. I was so, I'm not kidding. This is not a commercial. I was so glad to get home to my Hello pillow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't count the number of mornings I woke up on a pillow that was so sweaty and squishy, for that matter. I had to throw it in the dryer before making the bed, or I'd spend a restless night flipping and reshaping, trying to get cool and dry, but now I wake up as cool as the other side of the pillow because I now sleep on a Hello pillow. Hello pillow stays cool while giving my head, neck, and shoulders perfect support all night long, night after night. A lot of us have spent good money on good mattresses, but still haven't figured out the right pillow. It seems like one of those simple things, but we end up yanking one off the shelf at a big box store just because we like the way it feels in the rack. But good Lord, we get it home and it's all sweaty. Traditional fiber fills are hot and humid. They collapse under your weight and don't give you the full night support you need for good posture and good sleep. And you have to keep replacing them. A memory foam pillow gives a support but can't be molded into a shape that's right for you. It doesn't breathe, so it gets hot, gives off chemical gases. That's fun. So you probably shouldn't spend a third of your life inhaling those gases.
And you can adjust the fullness of the Hello Pillow by adding or removing more holes, hence the name Hello Pillow. And it all happens through a zipper that's covered for your comfort. You never even know the zipper is there, even if you look for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy with mine. I'm proud to give it my personal endorsement. I'm proud that a percentage of the profits are donated to the Nature Conservancy. Hello Pillows are available in three sizes, small, standard, and king. And right now, depending on the size, you can save up to $20 on each additional pillow with fast, free shipping. But you can only get that deal by going to hullopillow.com/BOBC. That's Hullo Pillow. That's HullopillowW.com/BOBC. Say hello to a healthy and restful night's sleep and wake up as cool as the other side of the pillow. Thank you for supporting this brilliant company and this show at hullopillow.com/BOBC.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
This one's going out to Eric Bowling, who I have fought with on Twitter. He's suspended for sending dick pics. Bye-bye, Eric. Bye-bye. I have to do that. I've been doing this a lot lately with this song. Lots of people leaving the scene who were happy to see go. Like Sean Spicer, Reince Priebus, Anthony Scaramucci. Now, Eric Bowling has been suspended from Fox News Channel.
Unbelievable. And I mean, that's not even the worst of it. And it's hard to imagine it being worse than that. But conspiring with the White House to put out a false story, a conspiracy theory about Seth Rich, the Democratic worker who was murdered last July.
Yep.
And you know, it's just unbelievable the depths to which this slimy organization will sink. And more frightening than that, Bob, is Sinclair Broadcasting, which is now bidding to own, what, like 72-74% of the U.S. Television market to have stations in that much of the country when for everybody else it's restricted to 39. And they're worse than Fox, and now they're ordering their stations. And I've heard from reporters who work at the station, these stations, saying, we're trying to keep the truth out there. I know some of the Sinclair stations, they're required to run this Russian lovers commentary like 9 times a week. And some of the stations have been airing it at 2 a.m. to try to keep it off their viewers' radar as much as possible. But they're going to lose that battle ultimately in spite of all the good intentions by reporters and news directors at these small local stations. So if it weren't bad enough, somebody said to me, I put up a post about Sinclair, and they said, ha-ha, joke's on them. I don't have cable. And I said, ha-ha, joke's on all of us. They're antenna television, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
So, Fox, we've always known as terrible. It has been proved in spades. I turned to my dad last week, who's argued for many years that was the other side of the news that MSNBC and NBC weren't giving. And I said, I just turned to him, and when that news came out, I said, I rest my case about Fox News.
Exactly. I mean, they're trying to do two things right now, Buzz. They're trying to attack the media on a couple of fronts. And by attacking the media, I mean infiltrate the media on two fronts. Right. Trying to change hearts and minds, not only by going after local news now with Sinclair Media, where Sinclair is buying up all these stations. And then literally, if you want to run a local news broadcast, you have to run their mandatory segments that are basically pro-Trump, pro-Republican propaganda segments.
Right.
Horrendously false, horrendously misleading, very obviously propagandized. And so that's happening all at once. At the same time, the religious right and conservatives are trying to overturn the Johnson Amendment, which will allow people like Ralph Reed and some of these mega churches to proselytize about politics from the pulpit. They'll be allowed to talk about politics. Oh. while still retaining their tax exempt status. This is
and although that, not using the words with a nod and a wink, threatening the news media with arrests and subpoenas and in some cases sabers. This is a very frightening time. I don't know that it's going to work. Like I said, fewer people are buying into this crap now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it any less frightening.
Yeah.
Any assault on our free speech and free press is one that everybody should be more than just a little concerned with. And this, as you've just outlined, this is a multi-pronged attack on free press and free speech.
Yeah, it's an attack on the hearts and minds of the American people. I mean, and this is completely separate from what's been happening with the Trump administration. This is going to happen regardless of who is president. I mean, it started under when Obama was still president, for God's sake. And if Mike Pence becomes president or whoever else becomes president next, this will continue unless it's bottled up again. And the whole idea now is the continuation of this. Whatever it is, 45-year, 50-year conservative movement, this long-form conservative movement to infiltrate all strata of American politics and media, this has been going on for a long, long time, where they started out infiltrating local and state political offices, places like school boards where they can influence textbooks, and now they have since infiltrated publishing, where you have lots of horrendous right-wing issue books that are released purchased.
Yeah, and this is a great lesson for those 209 or so Democratic candidates in the 2018 elections.
Yeah.
You know, we talked, I think, the last time I was on your show about the fact that the numbers are usually in the 20 to 40 range of the number of people from any one party running for a midterm office. And this time on the Democratic side, instead of being 20 or 40, I think it's 20 on the Republican side, 209 Democrats are running.
Yep.
It's over 10 times as many Democrats running now. Okay, so what those Democrats need to do is learn from what you just outlined about infiltrating school boards and starting at that local level. And that's what a lot of these offices are. They're smaller offices, but that's how we begin to win our country back, to borrow a Tea Party phrase.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why the focus on even 2018 seems like it's a little misguided, because we do have an election coming up in November. That's an off-year election, and that it's mostly state and local offices that are up for re-election or new candidates running. And that's where, you know, I think more attention needs to be paid, simply because we're really getting dangerously close. And now with the governor of West Virginia switching from Democrat to being a Republican at that Trump rally last week, which is just brain melting to watch that. But I mean, specifically this guy, what's his name? Jim Justice, the governor of West Virginia. That makes even fewer now Democrats running states. And that's bad news. Right. I mean, they are getting dangerously close to being able to push through constitutional amendments, because they've had this long-term focus, this long-game focus on infiltrating all these different levels. And now what they want to do is make it possible so that they can talk about politics from your church. They can, you know, your local clergy can brainwash the attendees. I don't know what you call them. The churchgoers. Thank you. Congregation was the word I was trying to think of. They can brainwash.
Man, you have been away for a while.
Oh, God. Yeah. I haven't been in a church in a long, long time. But, you know, so they can do that. And then they're infiltrating local news, which they didn't really have a stranglehold on. I mean, local news for the longest time is kid falls down a well, kid gets rescued from a well, and now sports. Right. I mean, that was the extent of local news. But in the last, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years or so, local news has really broken some big stories. I mean, the whole Bridgegate scandal with Chris Christie was broken at the local level. These are all things that are becoming increasingly important, and I think the conservative movement sees that occurring, and now they want to make sure that any free-flowing amount of information at the local news level gets completely killed before it actually reaches the public. And that's
Facebook is doing. Facebook is finally doing a good thing, and that is that it has signed up with Snopes.com.
Yeah.
And Snopes will help Facebook review the various news stories that are posted. Remember, during the 2016 campaign, Russian originating fake news was posted on Facebook in key districts that, you know, were in purple districts that could have gone either way. Yeah. And perhaps helped tilt. How did the Russians know which districts? Well, the theory is they had inside help in the United States. I wonder who that could have been. I have no idea. But Facebook from now on will monitor that stuff. And although it will not censor anything, it will, for every story of that sort, give you three or four links to legitimate news sources that contradict that fake news.
Yeah.
So that's very hopeful. It makes us all a little less vulnerable to the thing that apparently we were so vulnerable to in the final couple of months before the election.
Buzz, do you watch The 11th Hour with Brian Williams on MSNBC?
Not often enough. No.
It's, you know what? It's become the normalized Trump half hour. Not entirely, but there's some drips and drabs working their way into the half hour telecast that seem really normalizing of Donald Trump.
I had seen clips that would indicate the opposite of that, but I don't disbelieve you.
Well, no, yeah, I mean you're exactly right. There are some segments, and Brian Williams seems to be doing fairly well in terms of holding Trump to account and making sure he's tough on Donald Trump. The problem is they've been allowing more and more people into their telecast who give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt. For example, there was a guest on the night after or maybe it was the same night as Trump's West Virginia address, or West Virginia address. I called it an address as if it was somehow presidential. It was his screaming fest in West Virginia.
Know your audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so Brian Williams had a guest on that was talking about Trump's rally as if it was somehow normal, as if, oh, yeah, you know what, Donald Trump's really in his element when he's delivering these rallies. He, you know, he's really good at stirring up the audience and getting them really fired up. And I'm going, why are you saying Donald Trump is good at anything? You know, it normalizes him. It makes it seem okay that he's standing up in front of a crowd of people, whether it's a crowd of people in Huntington, West Virginia, or it's a bunch of Boy Scouts.
I read some CNN copy that said something about Mueller's investigating whether Russia interfered with our election. Well, no. Whether Russia has interfered with our election has already been established by 17 U.S. intelligence agencies. What Mueller is looking into is whether the Trump campaign conspired with the Russians to alter the outcome of the election. And there is, of course, increasing evidence that he did. So no benefit of the doubt, certainly none for me. You know, you can't control what your guests say in the case of Brian's show. But in a way, you're right. Shame on him for having them on in the first place. I to the extent that I can, stopped reporting what Trump says, stopped reporting what the White House or White House officials say, and just stick to the facts.
Yeah.
Because adding in what they have to say about it, which used to be considered balance, is now just muddying the waters with insanity and lies. And I will not do that. I just won't. And it's time for other news organizations, as I said in my commentary before I went on vacation, you know, it's time for them to stop as well. The other piece of good news, since you mentioned MSNBC, used to be this obscure little network that only crazy liberals like us watched. Now, you know, you've got Rachel Maddow is number one in her time period on cable most nights and occasionally in all of television. Lawrence O'Donnell is number two, and AM Joy. Joy Reid in the mornings on MSNBC now has more viewers than all of Fox News combined.
I love hearing that. That's really
things,
good news.
Things have really changed, and that was really good news to get on my vacation. By the way, this just in, Bob, from the Associated Press.
Oh, good.
Donald Trump says that if North Korea escalates its nuclear threat, quote, they will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen, end quote.
No.
Have a nice day.
Jesus, God. I'm laughing because otherwise I'd be screaming. That's
and crying. Absolutely.
Utterly terrifying that he would want to go there. I mean, obviously it's... could end up being just an idle threat. But, I mean, that's just, you know.
Of course,
but
he had nothing to say when Russia threw out nearly, what is it, 350 of our diplomats. But,
absolutely nothing about that.
There'll be fire and fury, my friend.
Oh, my God. Just the worst possible outcome in any of this is Donald Trump doing that. Donald Trump taking some sort of military action in North Korea, because it's I can't even imagine, because I start to game out in my head how bad it's possibly going to be, because initially he's going to take action, and initially you're going to see it's going to happen just like it did with the Syria bombing of that airstrip in retaliation for that chemical weapons attack. It's going to be, oh, Donald Trump became president tonight, and everyone's going to be praising, you know, the usual suspect are going to be praising Donald Trump for his action against North Korea, and that's going to give him an even bigger head, certainly increase his approval numbers to a certain extent, and then it's all going to go to hell, because of course North Korea is going to retaliate, and of course North Korea is going to retaliate against Seoul. North Korea is going to retaliate against Tokyo, against Japan, and that's going to be it. I wouldn't be surprised if North Korea even retaliated against China.
I wouldn't be surprised if North Korea retaliated against the statement I just read from President Trump, and I hesitate to use those words together, but this is obviously a very serious thing, and one that a lot of people fear. The latest poll that came out before that bulletin showed that most Americans don't think it'll come to that. They don't think it'll come to fireworks, but it also said that a slight majority of Americans does favor sending in troops to try to control the situation. To what degree that would be effective, I don't know. But it shows a willingness on the part of Americans to get somewhat involved in that battle, provided it doesn't get too ugly.
Well, hopefully this will be like everything else Donald Trump says, and he'll forget about it in 20 minutes. I mean,
yeah, oh, clear. Yeah, yeah. Somebody call Fox, have them put something on.
That's right.
I saw a thing this morning that said Fox is to Donald Trump, Fox and Friends is to Donald Trump what Romper Room was to kids. I'm pretty sure they're going to say my name today. So that's where we are.
Right. Yeah. Meanwhile, Sean Hannity is suing a bunch of former Obama administration officials because Chuck C. Johnson, conservative awfulness, horrible, horrible person, Chuck C. Johnson, said Obama illegally wiretapped Hannity. And now Hannity is hiring legal representation based on the word of hack fraud Chuck C. Johnson, the guy who's been basically banned from all social media because he is such an insufferable troll and such a marketeer of lies and propaganda and smears and doxing. He is absolutely the worst of the worst. In fact, I'm surprised Chuck C. Johnson hasn't been hired as communications director for Donald Trump, because he's just that bad. By the way, did you hear Stephen Miller is up for communications director? That should be fascinating.
That's another nightmare. I wonder again if John Kelly will allow such a thing, we don't know how John Kelly feels about Stephen Miller. I think that Kelly has a fair amount of control about what happens forward from this point. There are a few things to like about Kelly. There are more things to be concerned about Kelly. And the one thing that Kelly cannot do is control the tweets and viewing habits of Donald Trump.
Nope.
So, and since the chaos starts there, it seems less and less likely that Kelly will be able to have a moderating effect, but maybe he can keep Stephen Miller out of the communications job or anything else of importance.
Yeah, evidently John Kelly is eyeballing his former spokesperson at Homeland Security, David LaPan. I think
whoever that guy is, it would be better.
Yeah, but I mean, John Kelly's influence ends at the door to the Oval Office. I mean, nothing that happens in Trump's immediate personal space is controllable by John Kelly. So whatever Trump wants to do, Trump is going to do. The only thing John Kelly's basically, like I was saying this on the show last week, John Kelly's basically a glorified crossing guard. He's just going to sit with the orange sash on his on his torso. He's going to be directing traffic into and out of the Oval Office and extent he's, of his
he's gig. He's in charge for as long as Trump lets him be in charge. And he's done some things, and he can do some more things, maybe, until Trump unless and until Trump pulls the plug on that. And it seems inevitable that Trump would pull the plug on that.
Yeah. And finally, this is some positive news in the on the Trump-Russia front. Rod Rosenstein said that Mueller can investigate any crimes he discovers within the scope of his probe. Trump has said that it would be inappropriate for Mueller to dig into his family's financing, dismissing the probe as a total fabrication. And the by the way, the deputy attorney general added that the president has not directed us to investigate particular people in reference to Trump's recent comment that prosecutors should be investigating Hillary Clinton's deleted emails. And of course, Trump tweeted about that again today. He tweeted something about Loretta Lynch. He said emails show that the Amazon Washington Post. Yeah, I like how Donald Trump's for some reason going after Amazon.com. That's utterly fascinating because Amazon, Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, but why is he looping Amazon into all of this? That's a
I don't know. There's, you know, I'd be interested to know what his motivations are. I wondered about that myself. My first thought was it was an attempt to make it look corporate somehow, or I just don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah. Also, he said the Amazon Washington Post and the failing New York Times were reluctant to cover the Clinton Lynch secret meeting in plain. This is just they keep effing that chicken. They have to keep going back to that. This is nothing but Donald Trump trying to deflect to something else,
exactly.
Deflect to Hillary Clinton.
Look over there, Joey did it, Mom. I didn't do it. Joey did it.
That's, exactly. That's, right.
He's all about that, and it's this same thing again. It's an attempt to distract, and it's harping on the same old thing. It does play to his base, which is why he does it. And he's, as we mentioned at the top of the show, desperately trying to hang on to that base. But I also mentioned, I think it's working less for him, although it does still ring true with those diehard Trump supporters.
But once again, here he is saying something on Twitter that never actually gets executed in terms of policy. He tried a couple times. Tried once with the 3 million illegal voters in California, that whole conspiracy theory. Tried to turn that into something. Tried to turn the Obama wiretaps into something. Those were both ridiculous pooper tweets that he did that didn't end up going anywhere because he didn't actually execute any sort of policy based on those things. Well, actually, he did. You know what? He did. He did. He started the voting commission. He started he started that that voter fraud commission based on the 3 million illegal voters in California. And there have been some things, some questions in Congress about the wiretaps, but nothing has really come of that. And Donald Trump is certainly someone who could find out, being the commander in chief and with the entire intelligence community at his disposal.
Right.
But he hasn't done anything there. He certainly, this whole North Korea statement from today could end up going nowhere. So I wonder if the dwindling support for Trump is going to come in the form of, well, he says lots of things, but he's not doing anything. Because he's bringing up all these.
Yeah, there is some dissatisfaction. There has been prior to this.
Yeah.
In fact, we may even almost be past that stage where there are still many diehard Trump supporters who believe he's done a lot, which you and I know is crap. He hasn't done much of anything at all. What he has done has certainly sounded frightening. It has certainly set a frightening stage. But what has he actually done? And the answer is very little or nothing. And there is a dissatisfaction in the Trump base with the fact that he is more sound than fury, that he has done a lot less than he says he has, and they know it, and they're disappointed.
You know, I wonder, Buzz, if the Republican Trump voters in Kansas were hoping that Donald Trump would get elected just so they can prevent people who are the victims of nursing home abuse from actually suing the abusers. I wonder if that was something, because that's Trump.
Yeah,
that's something Trump wants to.
Those punk seniors are always making trouble, and they have to be stopped, and that's what that was all about.
Right. Yep, the Rust Belt. We're really interested in handcuffing abused senior citizens in nursing homes. That's exactly why they voted for Donald Trump.
Making America great again.
Making America, of course. They also voted for Donald Trump because they wanted coal mining companies to be able to dump sludge into creeks. That's exactly right.
And a wall paid for by Mexico.
The wall. Oh, my God. Must watch segment on the John Oliver Last Week Tonight Show. He did a whole segment on Border Patrol. Absolutely genius. John
That's
Oliver.
A boring job. Boring job.
John Oliver, the cocaine of politics.
I like when he does the thing with his nose and his finger on his nose real fast.
I know. But good Lord, I mean, that show, if you want to feel what it's like to, or kind of what it's like to be on cocaine, watch John Oliver.
Because where does he get that energy? I have no idea.
I have no idea either. But it's just, it's like, one, I don't think he breathes throughout the course of a single episode. It's done all in one breath. But really definitely worth watching, and especially the Border Patrol segment, because it just gives you an indication of myth versus fact, the kind of things that we're being told by Donald Trump, and the kind of caricaturization of the border that's happening in popular circles is absolutely wrong.
Plus, totally, the comedians, totally. They're our best journalists right now.
Definitely. Good Lord. And, you know, David Letterman, coming to Netflix. He's coming back to TV.
Yes. Hallelujah. I couldn't be happier. This is exciting news. And I think you and I in particular are really, really, really going to like this show.
Yeah, it's going to be 6 episodes, I think. But I don't imagine him just sticking with 6.
1 hour in-depth interviews plus field segments, which, you know, there's going to be humor in that.
Oh, my God. Those are going to be the things that are most worth watching, because that's where David Letterman really innovates. And always has. I always go back to those Rupert G. bits where he would hide with a microphone around the corner in a van and tell Rupert G. what to do. Funniest crap he's ever done. Some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen in late-night television. That, the Rupert G. things.
A lot of things that Letterman did were originated by Ernie Kovacs and by Steve Allen. Greatness is greatness. And Letterman was our only source for that greatness for a very long time.
Postmortem show coming up next with me and Buzz. Sign up at patreon.com/Bob and Chester. Just click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. See you over there, folks. Bye-bye.